we are enough. Amen. So I've been away for a month. It's been good. It's been good to be away, probably for everybody. There's new things happening. Furniture has been moved, which is good. I like to see things moved around while I'm away. I know that some projects had been started before I left, and they have continued, which is great. You should thank your leaders for that, for trudging ahead. That is a sign of health. I was away for 3 weeks, at least. 3 weeks. To Washington State. We drove with two boys, 14 and 10. We drove more than 3,500 miles. And it was a good trip. We got to see all of our family. We drove all the way past our most recent hometown, all the way to Seattle, saw everybody there, saw everybody in our hometown of Yakima and Central Washington, connected with friends and family. It was great. It was wonderful, and it was exhausting. In the driving, we even decided this go-round that because last year was such a rush to get out here and we had to blaze across North Dakota, we were told that was a huge mistake, that what we missed in South Dakota was really precious. And so, of course, what we decided to do was add even more distance and time to our driving so that we could see that little northeast part of Wyoming and South Dakota. And it was glorious. We got to see Mount Rushmore, which I love everything around Mount Rushmore. I'll say that much. I mean, it was cool to see, but ultimately, it was Mount Rushmore. So I'll just say that. South Dakota was gorgeous, though. So everything was going just perfectly until we reached the border of Minnesota, because, of course, in our boys' minds, because of the way the trip worked last year, once you're to Minnesota, you're basically to Minneapolis, right? Right. And so little did we know or recall, I guess, that we had several hours yet to drive. And so poor Owen, our 10-year-old, who just put up with the whole thing, finally by the time we got to Minnesota, he'd had enough. And so basically he just verbalized what we were all feeling inside, which is this trip has got to end soon. Well, like 3 more hours of driving and we arrived, finally. But it was a great trip. It was good to be away and to reconnect and to refresh in some ways. But I'll say in a lot of ways, as great as that was, it was really great to get back. The homecoming was great. Get back to familiar faces and familiar rhythms at work, to a bed that I recognize, and, mow my lawn like a real person. It just felt good to be back. Now, the trick with homecoming, of course, for me, and maybe for a couple others of you, is that when I leave, it takes me at least a week to leave, right? At least a week to leave. So I might get a week of vacation off, because then the third week is really the week of dreading coming back, because you know that you'll be punished with emails and voicemails and all of that. You'll be punished for having left. And so then the anxiety increases, the dreaming begins, and then the nightmare shows up, right? There's the recurrent nightmare, which for lots of clergy happens every week, particularly preachers, happens every week. For me, it happened predictably just a couple nights ago, right? The nightmare of not being prepared, right? You probably know this, right? So just nod your heads, right? It's the nightmare where you wake up, you've missed your alarm to get to church on time. Church starts in 10 minutes, but you live 20 minutes away. You go looking for something to wear that's presentable, and of course it's all filthy, if not just gone. You don't have time to eat. You don't have time for your coffee. There's no rhythm to the morning. You try to print your homily, and of course your computer and your printer are not communicating. I mean, everything that could go wrong goes wrong, right, in the dream. And so then the dream for me quickly goes to Paul in the sacristy, because worship, somehow I've made it. Usually the processional has gotten to here, and I'm still back there in the dream, and I'm picking through the sacristy looking for something to wear. Because even if I'm not prepared to preach or do anything else for that matter, I could just at least put on something that looks good, everything will be forgiven, right, and I'll be fine. Well, of course, you know, you get to the sacristy, and everything's gone. It's empty as well, except for the little choristers' tiny little red vestments, right? For people this big, that's all that's left. So you've got two choices. You come out with nothing on, which is not a good choice to make. Or you squeeze yourself into one of these tiny little chorister vestments, which only goes to about here anyways. And it's so tight that your arms are stuck straight out. And you come out at least trying to look the part of a churchman. I mean, that's the best you can do. You've got a vestment on. Then you show up and you drop a stink bomb from the pulpit. You knock everything over on the table, and it's just the worst. Right? This is the nightmare. Of course, it happens in its entirety just a couple nights ago. It may just be me, but I am so nervous about whether or not when I show up, I'll be good enough. Anyone ever wonder that? Anyone ever wonder? I mean, under all this fabulous vestment, there's just little old me, who's a disaster, who's tiny and scared, and I feel inadequate, particularly in the face of God's hopes for us, God's promises for us, my small place within it. As small as it is, I still have this pressing anxiety that I'm not good enough to pull it off. And that if I don't at least wear this tiny little chorister vestment, someone's going to figure me out. That's my great fear in the world. That's my great fear in the world, is being found to be inadequate, insufficient, unprepared. The fact that all four of the Gospels have the story we just heard about this morning in it tells me that this is a universal story. That I might feel like I'm in it alone, the only one suffering under the weight of this inadequacy, but the fact that all four Gospels have it in there as a prominent story, right? The feeding of the multitudes and the multiplication of loaves and fishes, it's in all of them. That tells me every single faith community that was trying to make sense of their small place in the big story of what God is doing in Jesus all felt the same way. They all wondered, am I going to show up on time? Am I going to be prepared with a word that's worthy of being shared, that's edifying? Will there be enough food for everybody? Will I look presentable? It is a universal issue, and each of the four Gospels reminds us that there's something that can be done about it. There's something that can be done about it. But what can be done about it is fairly counterintuitive. Because the only thing that can be done about it is to push into it and to lean through it and to discover that on the backside of our fears of inadequacy and insufficiency, guess what? We are still alive. And guess what? God showed up and did something amazing. Something we might call a miracle. And if we do that enough, if we stretch ourselves and push into our fears often enough, and we get used to the experience of death in that moment and resurrection on the backside of it, we might start to believe the narrative that we proclaim. Right? That life defeats death. Always. No matter how scared to death we are. No matter how scared to death we are, no matter how small we feel, no matter how inadequate we feel, no matter how insufficient we feel, God will make something of it, and we will come out stronger, more fully alive, more free. That is what new life looks like. but it takes practice over and over and over again. One commentator reflecting on this week's gospel had this to say. They suggested that had the church gathered been informed that a multitude was going to show up and want to eat, this is how it would have gone. We'd have received the request. We'd have sent it to council. And in council, there would have been quite a debate about the feeding of the multitude. It is suggested that in the debate from this particular commentator, it is suggested that the finance committee would remind us it's not in the budget. The outreach committee would remind us it didn't make our top three priorities for the year. Fair. The worship team would have been totally unavailable because they'd have been working on a great liturgy for the Passover feast that's on the way. They'd have been typing up liturgies and picking hymns, preparing a homily. Right? Could you go to the church down the street, right, where they're not doing these great big things? That's the worship committee. Formation probably would have pulled a book group together around it. Right? Let's read about it and talk about it. Think about it. Right? That's what we do in formation. And the building and grounds committee, they would have reminded us we do not have enough toilets. We do not have enough parking. The signage is abysmal. And for Pete's sake, they are going to trample our lawn and our gardens, and the place is going to look awful. It's going to look awful. It's going to look like there have been 5,000 people out here. And we can't have it. This commentator says, for all those various reasons, we'd have said no to feeding the multitude. And we'd have said no for reasons that when we actually think through it, like, those are front burner issues for most of us. Good planning, do we have the resources, are we postured properly to be able to do a good job, not just an adequate job, but a really good job, right? Because, I mean, the church is full of folks who want to do well. We want to present ourselves well, because you sure don't want to jump into something and get over your head and look like you have failed at it, right? Because that would just remind you of that nagging fear of inadequacy and of imperfection and insufficiency. If we fail, it just reminds us that the fear that we've been dealing with all along is still there. It's true, right? And so we talk ourselves out of opportunities to get on board with what God is up to. And what God is up to, most often, doesn't fit into our plans. Like, that is just from the get-go. We just need to know that. What God is up to is generally not in our plans. And so there's this wonderful tension in the story today then. This wonderful tension about what would we do? What would we do in the midst of this? What would we do in the midst of knowing that folks have come to see us, come to be with us, to be fed in our midst? What would we do if we knew it was more than we could handle? What would we do? Would we rise to the occasion? Would we risk looking like fools and failures? Or would we shrink away from the opportunity to risk, to get on board with God, to see if God doesn't show up in the midst of it, to see if our inadequacy hasn't left enough room for another miracle? Would we give it a go? That's the big question. That's the big question for us. We're now coming up on the 1 year anniversary of my start time. This fall, we're going to kick off in a big way, probably bigger than is wise, which I think is great. Had we had a 3 year plan before I got hired, it would have said, do not do anything as big as you're doing this fall for at least 3 to 5 years. Don't do it, because you won't be ready. You'll fall flat on your face. Council will be discouraged. Your volunteers will be burnt out. Don't do it. do not get involved with God for 3 years. It would have said that, right? Because that's what folks worried about self-preservation do. But that's not what we're going to do. That's not what we're going to do. We have two very new substantial things showing up into our midst. Throngs of people, hordes, multitudes of people showing up to do some big stuff here. We've got a senator showing up in a month to do a book signing. When's the last time that happened at the cathedral? We've got 1,000 people coming from across the country and around the globe to hear a couple of speakers that they're really excited about. They burst the bounds of another faith community and needed a place like the cathedral to come to. And because I'm not very smart about stuff like this, and because I know them, I sent a note and said, well, why don't you come check us out? Assuming it wouldn't work. It worked. They're interested. They're going to show up, and they're going to stretch us. And the wonderful thing about both of these events is that it's asking the questions about us. There's all sorts of opportunity, really, to get out if we wanted to. We could be afraid of toilets or signage. We could be afraid of electrical overload. We could be afraid of parking or our gardens. We could be afraid of all those things. But everybody on the front line of making this work is now saying, you know what? It's the right thing to do. It's good to stretch. We don't have to assume that if there's tension or if there's a mess, that it means we're inadequate. It doesn't have to mean anything other than that we are faithful to the God who gives us opportunities to serve. And to serve in a way that is beyond our immediate horizon, to serve in a way that is beyond our numbers and figures on a spreadsheet that says, sure, you can afford this, or no, you can't. This is a God who is interested in us getting on with the Holy Spirit, who is doing new things in big ways, often outside of this place. And the capacity for that is going to stretch us. Here's the interesting thing. In the gospel today, who brought the bread and the fish? Was it Jesus' buddies? Was it the inner circle? They were going to starve themselves. They sure weren't ready. The multitude didn't bring any food. Some kid who doesn't know any better shows up with food. And he offers it up, and God makes more than enough out of it. This one kid who has enough faith to offer up a small offering to God and say, I'm not even worried about whether this is adequate. I'm not worried about whether this is good enough, because I believe in a God who will satisfy us, a God who stretches us, a God who invites our best self to step forward in the face of anxiety rather than shrinking away from it and putting on a tight little vestment to hide from everyone. I believe in a God who can make great things happen here. That's what this kid said. I hope we'll pay attention to that voice. It's a little voice. It often sounds naive. It often sounds overly optimistic, unrealistic. I hope we'll listen to that voice this year and every year when we're given an opportunity just to show up and offer what we have. That is our challenge. That is our opportunity. It is God's gift to us to remind us that miracles really do happen.